Thank you very much. And thank you for everyone who's here today. It's great to see a room full of folks who are interested in learning more about how to address certainly the needs of individuals with disability as it relates to promoting health and ensuring equal access and opportunities for all. So I don't have any relationships to disclose. Here's a brief agenda that kind of covers what I'll talk about during my presentation. And I thought that I'd start first with really who the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition is and how we have arrived at inclusion as one of our priority areas. So the Council is a group of volunteer citizens who have been appointed by the President of the United States to advise through the Secretary of Health and Human Services on all things related to physical activity, sport participation, recreation, as well as most recently, nutrition and healthy eating, which we don't claim to be the experts on by any means, and really work across different offices throughout the government to really support that healthy eating part of our work. So as you may notice here by the photograph, those are some of our council members. They're celebrity athletes, chefs, physicians. We have a physical education district director of a school district as well. And they all really, aside from the advice and recommendations that they provide to our office and to the administration, they also really help us get our message out, whether that be via social media, via public service announcements, or what have you, via helping to facilitate partnerships with the National Football League or some of the other entities that they work with in their professional lives as well. So we really work to leverage their celebrity manpower to communicate the importance of leading a healthy lifestyle that includes regular physical activity as well as good nutrition. So here's just a quick slide to show all of our programs and initiatives. They really focus on helping individuals find ways to make regular physical activity, which for, I'm sure you know, for adults is 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, and 60 minutes a day, 5 days a week for kids, and then working on certainly healthy eating, incorporating the recommendations set by MyPlate. So all of our programs focus on the range across the lifespan of individuals. However, most recently, a lot of our current initiatives, Let's Move Active Schools, as well as our Presidential Youth Fitness Program, have a strong focus on youth as well. But through our I Can Do It, You Can Do It program, we really have broadened our focus and really who we have chosen our audience. So in addition to individuals with disability, it's focused on children as well as adults with disability, and really uses a partnership mechanism to facilitate new activities and opportunities for these individuals with disability to be active, whether that be in a school setting or in some community setting, whether that be a local health department program or a Boys and Girls Club, any community program that is out there and accessible by individuals without disability. We really work through this program to provide resources and technical assistance to ensure that those programs are accessible and inclusive of children and adults with disability. So I'm sure that most of you know the need for these types of programs, being here and having interest in this room, but I'll do a quick recap. Here in the United States, there are about 56 million individuals with disability, and there are notable disparities that exist in this population. Adults with disability have lower rates of physical activity, as well as report higher rates of obesity and overweight compared to adults without disability. And then when you look at children with disability, children and youth with disability, there's often less opportunities to participate or be active in the school setting, whether that be via recess, via physical education class. There are often less opportunities for a youth with a disability to participate. Same goes for going out into community programs. There's often a lack of accessibility or lack of knowledge by staff to be able to adapt and find ways to include individuals with disability. So it was wonderful to hear about all these amazing resources and the other work that folks are doing out across the nation to make those connections so folks know how to make their programs inclusive. So really, I Can Do It works to address these barriers. We hope that I Can Do It and the model that I Can Do It provides can really allow and enable entities, whether it be in schools or community settings, to impact kids and adults with disabilities and their families, really striving to facilitate opportunities to be active, working with a mentor, which I'll explain a little bit later, to meet once a week and really promote work on behaviors that promote health related to physical activity and healthy eating. And really, the end goal is that we drive the elimination of health disparities in this space and really even the playing field for kids and adults with disability. So I wanted to provide a bit of background before I Can Do It, as the President's Council cannot take much credit for the development of the program. It started long ago in the early 2000s at the former HHS Office on Disability under the leadership of Dr. Margaret Giannini, who is the visionary for this program, which initially started off to serve children who were had severe disabilities. Since then, since the program has been adopted by the council, we kind of changed the program up a little bit, convened some experts who had implemented the program in an evaluation study that was set by NIH, and we made three main changes to the program before we kind of rolled it out under the President's Council. We expanded the scope to include children and adults with disability, and then we also made a stronger focus on the nutrition component of the program, and then we also simplified the evaluation. As you can imagine, being an NIH-funded study, there were significant requirements, reporting requirements for data collection in the program. And using the CDC BRFS survey to determine vegetable and food intake, amounts of water consumed in the week, simply wasn't possible for these participants. So we reworked those things and we relaunched the program, which I'm proud to say has 82 sites now across the country. So forgive me, I'm going to speed up because I don't have very much time left here. So here you can see how our programs are laid out. The majority are existing in community settings. So we have 57 sites in community settings. And then the others kind of span across college and university settings, as well as K through 12 schools and school districts. So we're impacting about 200,000 individuals with disability and their families right now through the program, and we've trained through our I Can Do It training modules almost 300 volunteers, teachers, and what have you who work with individuals with disability who participate in the program. So I'll give a quick overview of how I Can Do It works. Through the program, we provide a host of resources, including technical assistance. An entity essentially reaches out to us by emailing us and letting us know that they're interested in learning more about the program. We share the resources after a partnership process takes place, which just really includes a form. And we begin to assign each advocate with an individual technical assistant staff person that they can speak with to help develop how they will go about establishing their program. So in addition to the technical assistance, we provide a program manual that really talks about the model in each setting, whether that be schools or communities. And then we provide orientation and training modules for those folks who will be working with participants in those programs. We also provide a host of resources on physical activity and healthy eating as well. And then a huge part of the program is our recognition component, which is through our Presidential Active Lifestyle Award, and also helps to keep track and encourage participants to set physical activity and healthy eating goals as they participate in the program. Here's a quick slide to show what those resources look like. And also, a number of the resources were uploaded onto the site in case you would like to take a look at any of those. So we really partner with organizations to facilitate opportunities for individuals with disability to be active in a school or community setting. We have been very fortunate for this past year and this upcoming year to incentivize financially 20 entities who will implement the program and enable us to collect more individual data to determine outcomes in physical fitness, physical activity, fitness, and healthy eating. So more to come on how the program impacts the individual at the individual level, but we do know that the model itself has been incredibly helpful in really meeting individuals where they are in the spectrum of their level of readiness to be able to include individuals with disability in their programs and policies. And we have certainly leveraged the partnership, the power of partnerships, to help not really recreate the wheel, but share some of the resources, some of which have been mentioned today, and others to help continue the growth of this importance of inclusion. So each of you have a role to play, and I can do it. That is that you get involved. I'm sure you all are interested to continue ensuring that access is a reality for people with disability where you live or where you work. And we would love to include you all in our listserv, so you can email us at icdi@hhs.gov if you have more information, or if you would like more information, or if you would like to be included in that listserv. So also check us out on our website, fitness.gov. And if you're on social media, also please follow us at fitnessgov on Twitter. Thank you all very much. And there's my email as well if you have any other questions and want to reach out directly. Thank you.
I wanted to say thank you to the presenters for excellent presentations and for staying on time. So I wanted to also open it up for questions. So if there's anyone who has a question, please feel free to ask.
I'm from New York. Thanks for the it's really a comment. In terms of my insight, I've spoken to a lot of professionals about the disparity issues, and sometimes it's confused with utilization. Well, a few people said,
do you want us to state your name and your affiliation? Sorry.
Data was collected last May. However, we took that information and we are making changes that are in our program and trying to target and be able to raise this awareness, have training opportunities available, and then we're going to assess that again in our fifth year of funding that. So no, we did not follow up with them afterwards. That was
Anyone else? Sure.
So I have a question about the Nacho or Kendall or Jennifer. State ranking, health ranking, treat the disability as the outcome. That is a bad thing, like a medical model. And do you have any suggestion that how to read the health ranking, a county ranking, going to be the disability level? What we are talking about social model, and they don't treat the disability as the outcome. Is there any suggestion or strategy that you can intervene in the future in the local community? Because I receive the health ranking all the time, and diabetes or unhealthy behavior and the disability status as outcome. So we are told that you need to improve. But the people with disability is somehow different. So is there any kind of the information or suggestion or how to go to the local community? Yes.
Well, I would just say, you know, that part of that Olmsted plan in 2001 is that disability would be represented as a public health demographic and not as an outcome. So in all of our reports, all of our surveys out of the department, that's how we look at it. So I think AUCD and NACHO, in terms of trying to identify these kinds of policies and promote them top down, is what's needed to really transition public health into the social model. I think that's a great question.
It is. That's going to add, a great idea for us to really kind of move forward with next steps.
Jennifer, can you speak a little loud?
Okay, I didn't mention that we actually have a health and disability work group. In fact, we've got two members here with us, both Meg Creasy and Adrian Griffin. And so it's a pretty diverse collection of subject matter experts from academia, from local and state health departments, and from the disability organization. So I think it's definitely a great question for us really for moving forward. In fact, the Healthy Living work group that I've presented on, this is our next focus area. We feel like we were able to achieve, you know, our goal of getting 6 states by the end of 2015, paying attention to the inclusion policy piece, and we'll still keep pushing that. But the group actually just this month changed over to more of a health equity focus. So that disability is not only seen as a negative health outcome, but included in health equity discussion and not seen as just a negative health outcome. And in particular, emphasis that we're trying to impact is the National Health Equity Index right now. We're trying to get included in that planning process now so that those measures and indicators are reflective of people with disability and able to live well with disability, not the need to make it. So join our work group.
So I have a follow-up question to that. So a lot of, the work that this work is amazing because it's the panel, you know, you've addressed things from the local level, from the national level, from data analysis, from evidence-based programs. But my question is, a lot of the work that's done at state and local health departments is dependent on funding, for example, from the CDC. The funding, as we all know, is very siloed. So you have a program that's on stroke prevention or heart disease or tobacco cessation, and none of those programs have the inclusion of people with disabilities as part of their FOA. So as a result of which, when the health departments get their money, they're focused on heart disease, you know, stroke prevention, based on whatever is in the FOA and the populations of interest in the FOA. So until we actually infiltrate the CDC along with, and you know, all the other organizations, along with the, you know, it has to be a multi-pronged approach. Okay, Meg, go ahead.
Well, Well, I think that I think maybe the FOA can emphasize it, but 504.
Right, there is
504, and whether it's our role to enforce 504, the Rehab Act, how many people are familiar with 504, right? So is whether it's our role as CDC to enforce 504, which I think CDC doesn't want to do. That's somebody else's. I think we can promote knowledge and awareness about it, but explicit, I think it's a little bit of a double-edged sword by putting it in the FOA as if, and if you can, may actually, in some instances, I think, lower the expectation for inclusion. No, the expectation is that these are federal funds. So I think there's, you know, I think you're right. I think there's some education work to do, but, you know, to think about policies that work wherever you are.
Yeah. So changing my hat to the chair of the Friends, the National Center in Burns Action Without Responsibility at CDC, we're actually trying to work that angle and push CDC. They actually have a position chief disability inclusion officer. So we're trying to remind them that they have that person there and that that person is supposed to be making sure that new FOAs are inclusive and including people with disabilities as an explicit target audience, not like a, oh, if we get there, but that's a minimum,
yeah,
but that's just like a baseline. So that's something that I know has been on our collective radar and that we're getting pushed on because of the timing. A lot of the FOAs are either mid-cycle now or they're about to be renewed, so we're trying to artfully get into those discussions to make sure that that's part of the language.
I just was going to ask, as part of your survey, Kendall, did you guys look at the existence of the ADA compliance officer in local health departments as well as the ADA transition plan? Because maybe that's what we need to do. We need to revitalize the role of the ADA compliance officer and revitalize the ADA transition plan and what the components need to be.
I think that would be a great thing for us to do as we move forward and kind of doing a reiteration of our study. We wanted to do kind of like a baseline. And we suspected, and I think we got our hypothesis confirmed, is that a lot of health departments, some of them are very progressive, but many of them just do not have the time, the resources, the expertise. So that's what led us to develop some of these simple fact sheets that aren't too long, they're less than 4 pages. It's really a one-on-one. It's really, you know, what do the health departments need to know about social disabilities? And then building off of that work. So I think over time, I think we should be able to get to that point.
I'll just say to your question that, Nisha, we have been working with
states. Can you just speak louder?
Oh, yeah. We're working with states and the state health department, and funding's always so different and how it works in different states, but we've been making some progress at the state health department, even if you're not receiving, you're not a CDC disability and health grant in state. To work with the Office of the State Health Department in like the Office of Health Equity or the Office of Health Disparities and say, even if you're not required at the federal level, what can you do as the state to work with your local health departments, since local health departments are our target audience? So we've been targeting states and saying, what can you do at the state level? And we've been making some progress with that, and we've got a lot of interest. And so that's kind of an extra work that the states are interested in doing, but if you work with the health equity department or those who focus on health disparities, there's a willingness there. And so we're trying to have them, if they're going to fund like a small pilot project for local health department, get them to include people with disabilities in like their small
community. Right. And I think, you know, at least in Massachusetts, it took a while to even get the Office of Health Equity to recognize that disability should be included in that. Mm-hmm. And now it is, but it's a lot of work.
Example.
Yeah, and I'm wondering also in the work that you're doing is if you can eventually have states or departments that are can mentor other departments. I mean, I think that's especially given that we have the state grantees, but I think that would be a good step, and Meg can mentor everybody.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
I just wanted to ask, but I can do it, you can do it.
Sure,
love the revitalization of the program. We were, you know, involved in the research, and it was, you know, it was a top-heavy program. And I wondered if you had some examples of the program providing continuing education opportunities for educators in the state?
So there, through, so not specific continuing education credits, we haven't really navigated that angle. However, so we are providing opportunities for master's level grad students to be able to gain hands-on experience by working with mentees in the program. So, for example, we have schools who are majoring in occupational and physical therapy, who have facilitated community partnerships to provide the facility, you know, some to also provide equipment or transportation, and they're able to actually coordinating and managing the program itself, developing and establishing what activities will be had, you know, what, how regularly they will meet throughout the duration of the program, and they're also, you know, working one-on-one with the mentees with disability and working on setting those physical activities and those eating goals. So from that perspective.
I was just going to mention, you know, in Montana and other states, adaptive physical education is not a requirement of both the faculty and the schools, or it's not a part of the core curriculum. And so this is just one way to start to augment the capacity of our educators to include students with disabilities. I do hope, you know, that it's sitting within this multi-pronged approach where we can start to work at the policy level in our state.
Yeah, definitely, and I'll also include, so through our Let's Move Back to School initiative, we have gained a huge stakeholder base of administrators, you know, from the top down, really, administrators all the way down to the individual teachers, whether they are regular teachers or adaptive physical educators. So we do provide I Can Do It as a resource through the Active Schools program, as well as the Residential Youth Fitness program. So. And we're actually convening an expert panel meeting, well, Let's Move Back to Schools is this December, to really talk through how they can take a more proactive approach to making sure that educators are getting, at the minimum, some level of inclusion training so that they're able to be more inclusive of their students.
Any other questions? Yes.
One more comment on this discussion. Side of this is sort of a health literacy initiative that really makes sure that patients and people with disabilities know how they can access, learn the vocabulary that they need to be part of. And from the evaluation project that I've been working on, that was really critical because we were starting to train the educators, train the healthcare professionals, and we realized that many of the patients did not have the vocabulary, didn't have the knowledge of parents who came into the hospital and into the medical staff didn't understand how they could ask the questions. So this access issue has to be a balance and how literacy, public awareness, knowing how to get into these programs and how to go and say, this is what I need or this is what my child needs. That's the other part of this, and great stuff.
Anyone else? Well, thank you. Great presentations, and let's keep this conversation moving.